time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, February 26, 2024. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and oftentimes with as busy as we are, anywhere. I love the anywhere part of it. Anyway, excited to get into today's podcast. We got a lot of great information. A special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software. If you have an uncompromising idea of how you want to run your operation, you're going to love how much control you have if you're using Byte Software. You can design, manage, customize workflows in-house with a macro-based automation validation tools with countless customization options. Check out the interview we did with Aaron D. of Loan People on the topic of mortgage technology benefits and how it benefits lenders. Very good interview we did with Aaron D. That interview was done on January 24th, 2024, just recently. Also, Finastra. We're so grateful for their sponsorship, the largest fintech company in the world. Great to have them. Tap into the robust features such as the user-defined groups for processors, underwriters, and closers. Really effective and powerful tool. Also, Total Expert is already built for lenders and has the intelligence of understanding their unique needs. Check out what is already built for you in Total Expert, but also how you can design it around what your unique needs are. Check out the interview we did with Dan Cantinelli and Melissa Wright of American Pacific Mortgage. The topic was navigating through continued heightened rate environment. We did that back in March of 2023. Also, lender homepage, convert and close more loans with AI-powered digital platform that empowers loan officers to connect with more ideal clients, boost realtor referrals, and close more loans on time. Check out the interview that we did back in December 12th with Rocky Fortin and Quay Parker. And the topic was mortgage tech to maximize production in 2024. Also grateful for True being a sponsor. They have a very cost-effective, affordable solution that is literally 80% cheaper than the competitor that's out there. They cover employment verifications, insurance verifications, and decreases the time to close. And it is a frictionless process that you can use. Also, check out the interview we did back on November 29th with Richard Grazer. New technology, new ways to cut costs. Also, I want to thank our sponsors, Angel AI, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modex, and Knowledge Coop, and iEmergence. Also, a special shout out to all of our regulars. So grateful to have Adam DeSantis here, Les Parker with his TM Spotlight. Matt Graham is here with us live today with MBS Live, as well as David Kittle. Alice Alvey's got an important update for us on the Realtor lawsuits, as well as Alan Pollack and our newest contributor, Bill Corbett. Let's get into it. Alice Alvey's here with an update on a really interesting report this week. Alice, especially as you're talking about what's going on with the realtor lawsuits, give us an update. Good to have you.
Hi, Dave, and hi, everyone. There's a lot of talk about the lawsuits that are between the different real estate entities, the National Association of Realtors, and the Department of Justice, that I thought it would be a great topic for this group to talk a little bit about. And what I wanted to do was just start out with some of the basics. Have any of you watched the show Suits on Netflix? It is attorneys, and during the episodes, they get so into the legal gamification of law that Andy and I are like, okay, wait a minute. What was that? What just happened? And it's craziness. And I promise I don't want to make this part of the podcast about that, right?
So this isn't going to be a Suits episode, huh? Okay.
No, it's not a Suits episode. I don't want to get that. We'll say that for qualified people like Mitch Kiner. But I just wanted to talk about it from a practical standpoint and from a human standpoint and just from the facts of what is from my perspective and going on as I see it out there. So essentially, if you say we've got class action lawsuits that are going on that are talking about the anti-competitive nature, about the way real estate commission is structured. My first house that I bought back in the 70s, to me, it was sold to me. That was just a sharing of commission, right? The commission was 6%, and here's two people who are sharing. The realtors really sell that point. There's a lot that they're selling about that. Today, with these lawsuits, they really are trying to decouple that. There is history on this that goes all the way back to really 1990 was one of the first cases. Some of these other cases started in 2005, where it just seems like there's always this pressure to change how the National Association of Realtors really structures the transaction. And does a buyer know or believe that they can negotiate their commission? Or is it all set? You all know when you go to list a home, you're writing that commission number in the listing agreement. And does that carve that out in stone? So I think I'm really interested in this group's thoughts on what the real impact is of this. From what we're reading today, these cases are still going to go back and forth in court over and over again. This could drag out for years in the courts before there's anything very formal that occurs. What I am seeing is some strong recommendations for buyer's agents to make sure that they have an agreement with their customer so it clearly identifies their service is not free and the seller is paying for it. There are definitely some nuances in the day-to-day that to me are a little challenging and fall in that anti-competitive structure, which is you have to be a broker in the National Association of Realtors to gain access to a house, for example. Now, again, I'm not an attorney and somebody might say, no, you can do this, that, or that to be able to get to show a home. But as far as access to that lockbox, it's my understanding you have to make sure you're part of that real estate network. You also have to make sure that you're putting in a number when the house is listed on what is the buyer's agent getting paid. And recently, I think that was shown to say that it could be zero. I think I'd love to have this group's thoughts on where you think this is today and where you think it will be. And so that's my $5,000 consumer snapshot. How's that?
Yeah. One of the things, Alice, is from your perspective, and I've been tracking this pretty well, but I honestly haven't been paying attention in the last few weeks. Has there been any recent rulings that have stood out in your mind that have made adjustments on this? The one that I'm reading is not so much the ruling from the courts, but the Department of Justice has weighed in fairly significantly recently saying that I don't care what the courts say, this is the way it's going to be. Which is seems to be a politicalization of what's going on here. Is that going to override everything? So there's the what's going on in the courts, and then you have the DOJ, Department of Justice, who is saying, okay, lawsuits aside, here's what we're saying. Has there been, what's your, have you had a chance to sort through some of that?
So the Department of Justice, let me go back to some of my notes here. They continue to investigate NAR on this. They were investigating them back in 2005 related to the virtual broker. So there was issues back then with some anti-competitiveness with NAR needing to open up more to lower commission rates for virtual brokerage firms that didn't have the same amount of overhead. And there was a 10-year settlement back then. That started opening up hearings again then with the DOJ in about 2018 when that 10-year agreement expired in 2019. I think the final settlement here right now is something that we have to look at as an industry, or they are looking at as an industry, and do they need to change some habits? But the DOJ isn't going to back down right now. I don't profess to be a lawyer, but it is multifaceted. There's the Mueller case. There's the Sister Burnett lawsuit. There are now that there was this case that was settled October 31st, and that's the big one that was hitting the news at the, I think it was $1.3 or $1.8 billion. Mm-hmm. That seems to have now opened up multiple lawsuits that these plaintiff attorneys are going to go after. The ripple effect's going to continue, I think.
The thing that's most surprising is that National Association of Realtors has not gone to a globalist settlement on this. That's the part that's probably been the biggest head scratcher for me. Let's bring in our panelists on this. David Kittle, let's start off with you. What are you hearing out there as the president, co-founder of TMC? I know you and your members are watching this closely.
We are, David. It's a mess. I think hindsight's always perfect. They probably didn't address this nationally as quickly as they should have. I think that's obvious, but it's causing a lot of problems because people don't know how to deal with it. And people who have bought homes several times have never had to do it before. So it's a huge change for somebody that's repetitive. It might be, and I don't know this, a little bit easier for a first-time home buyer to understand it than somebody who's my age or your age and had bought multiple houses. But it's causing a lot of problems.
Yeah. Mark, your thoughts?
I've owned two real estate companies in my past, and I can't put any words around this other than two initials, BS. I think it's the most ridiculous thing we're dealing with this at this point in time. Sometimes people just look for something to do, and I think that's one of these examples. I don't think it's going to serve any good purposes out there. You still have that dilemma. If one person lists the house and sell it, they're still going to get all the commission. I think the way I read it, that's fine, but it's a system that worked extremely well. There was compromises realtors could make when they're trying to help a buyer get in a house. I've seen each side reduce commissions a half a point and all that. I don't know why this has come up for an issue and has escalated to the level it is, but I think it is pure bullshit. And they just need to, you can blank that out if you want to. But I'm just sorry that we got to deal with it in the industry today, because I think it's going to be more of a detriment to everybody involved than it's going to be a positive.
Yeah.
Amen, Mr. Helm.
Yeah. Calling it like it is, BS. Bullshit. All right. Corbett, what's your thoughts, Bill?
So I'm in agreement with Mark, but I also think that the cat has been let out of the bag and momentum starts to take over. Number one. And number two, it's adding a lot of confusion and noise to a real estate market right now that ought to be focused entirely on how to support home sale activity, getting more houses on the market, getting the turnover that not just our industry, but the entire economy needs. I think there's also one of the consequences of this, and I think one of the drivers is to really squeeze out the whole buyer's agent and squeeze them out by making that be paid for outside of the commission, which then starts to mess with borrower funds to close and brings up a whole nother set of issues. Having said that, and the real estate industry has held on to their close to 6% lock on commissions way longer than any other similar type of commission business has, in terms of, you know, driving out competition and keeping the status quo. And when you do that for too long, it tends to blow up in a pretty ugly way.
Matt Graham, you watch the markets and what's going on. Any chatter on your commentary that you have up there and yours, all the feedback that comes in from those that are subscribers to MBS Live?
Yeah, nothing much other than just, hey, can you believe this stuff, and passing around links and sharing the news. I haven't heard a lot about how it's affecting boots on the ground, mostly because people are too busy freaking out about how high rates are and how low volume is.
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of there's a good number of factors into this that enter in. First of all, there are the lawsuits. We've been tracking this closely. We've had some really good interviews. I put those links in the podcast down below. But I'm telling you, we're in a place where there's two issues going on, Alice, in my mind. You have the DOJ, who's asserting their will, and we're in an election year. And so this is going to play out for a while. I don't think anything is going to happen in the short term. I think what's really, the people that are closest to this says that this is not going to really change things. What's going to happen is a realtor is going to have to be much more effective at selling what they do, their services. They're going to have to list out what they do. And there's new services that are coming out that are enabling the realtor and how to market their services. I think this is actually a huge opportunity for mortgage loan originators to come alongside of realtors and help them explain what they do. There's 200 points of services. I'm thinking about our RESPA, Alice, and what we had was the 11 points that you have to do a realtor has to do in order to be able to earn a commission. There's 200 points of services that they have. And when you start listing out all the services that they do, it's going to cost for the realtor to up their game to explain what is it you're getting, buyer, as a result of my involvement in this. And I think those that do a better job at that are the ones that are going to excel, and the ones that don't are not. And we're, see, I, thought this was going to resolve itself much more.
It's going to end up costing those companies a lot of money to keep fighting this in court. I think you bring up a great point that really today, realtors and mortgage lenders alike should be banding together on this and make sure they're supporting what the value of the buyer's agent is, how that compensation works. Sometimes all it takes is a few bad actors out there who go, no, my service is free, to prompt something like this when it's one of those 98% of them are doing it well and ethically, and then there's something out there that catches the DOJ's attention. And I don't know if that's the behind the scenes of it, but I know in the mortgage space, sometimes that's typically what ends up happening, is a couple of bad actors or some kind of advertising, the DOJ or other regulator gets involved. The idea that the buyer may now have to start paying commission, if these suits are settled to the negative for NAR, and you say, okay, what is the outcome then, to say the seller is no longer paying that buyer's agent commission? That's one small piece in the overall housing market. The housing market is mortgage rates. It is supply and demand. Way down the list is, and the few percentage points related to the commission. So will it be tougher for buyers who have to try and figure out how to get that paid? Will they end up trying to negotiate that through the sale price, and it'll probably just end up back where it is, or they'll just negotiate?
I think that's where it's going to come back to, is it's going to be really a whole lot of to do, a whole lot, billions of dollars in fines and fees, and it's going to come back to pretty much the way it is and has been, is what the
Got a problem with seller compensation, or seller contributions to the deal. Then I think the agency would be forced to go back and look at that, and hopefully they would exclude this. But there's a ripple effect in that direction.
It's good that you bring it up, because the biggest issue has been the Department of Justice weighing in on this and putting their finger on the scale to weigh it, to go a particular direction. They basically said, we don't really care which way these lawsuits are going to go. We're just saying that the seller cannot pay the buyer's commission, period, end of story. It's going to go this way, which then opens up a new can of worms, which means goes back to Fannie and Freddie. Can it be financed? A whole lot of issues. So stay tuned. We'll be on top of it. Anything else that's going on out there, Alice, that we need to be aware of?
I think that was the main topic for today, Dave. I'll turn it back to you guys.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Adam DeSantis of the MBA for the MBA Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. At MBA Servicing Solutions Conference and Expo last week, FHA announced its Payment Supplement Program. The new loss mitigation tool will allow servicers to help borrowers avoid foreclosure in a high interest rate environment. Using partial claims funds held in a custodial account, a borrower can temporarily receive a reduced monthly payment for 3 years without completing a traditional loan modification. While FHA's final policy remains resource intensive, it simplifies much of the operational complexity that existed with FHA's initial proposal and reflects much of the feedback MBA provided through two iterations of industry review. Specifically, the payment supplement has an incentive payment of $1,750, provides model documents including the payment supplement agreement and the annual and final disclosures, and has an optional implementation date of May 1st of this year and an effective date of no later than January 1st, 2025. MBA will continue to review the details of the payment supplement and provide feedback to FHA through the Loan Administration Committee. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Adam DeSantis and the MBA, for all that you do and for being a supporter of the podcast by providing these updates. Really appreciate it. Be sure to sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app, and you can support what the MBA is doing on the Hill with this app, Mortgage Action Alliance app. Very good. Very powerful. Let's get over to Les Parker with today's TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Parker, how are you doing? What you got for us today?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Well, cash about to get upset from watching Jay's delay. He's checking out the news until his eyeballs fail to see.
On January 31st, during Jay Powell's press conference, he said that the committee would begin to explore slowing sales of its Treasury portfolio. Some analysts think the language indicates quantitative tightening slows later than sooner, while others opine it slows sooner. The market continues to trade sideways and mechanically as it waits for the Fed to reduce the sale of bonds. Expect the bears not to find the momentum to push rates to new highs. As a result, the bulls can roar back in spring when QT thaws. No way to delay cash troubles coming the Fed's way. These views are mine. Avoid the trouble every day at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, good job, Les Parker. I want to get some commentary around that. When you start looking about Fed speak on that, Matt Graham is dialed in with us live. Matt, love to get some of your thoughts about Fed speak. We've got some of that going on. Thoughts?
Yeah, so what Les is mentioning is quantitative tightening, the roll-off of balance sheet assets by not reinvesting the proceeds that they get on their bond portfolio. They have been very forthcoming and explicit about, not in the same way that Mark Helm is explicit in using language on the podcast, but they've been very clear in saying that they are going to taper QT. So they are going to not roll off proceeds coming in on their balance sheet. And that's going to be a gradual process. And apparently, or probably based on what we saw in the Fed minutes last week and speculation before that, it has to do with the liquidity situation surrounding the reverse repurchase agreement window. Don't ask me to explain that very well, if at all. And I guess the moral of the story is it's a housekeeping thing in terms of bond market liquidity. And it's not necessarily a signal regarding rate policy or that the Fed is trying to add new easing into the system, although there is certainly a chance that it could act as such. It may end up being hard to tell because at the time that they actually start doing this, it would probably coincide with generally friendly developments in monetary policy and generally friendly economic data as far as rates are concerned.
Yeah, good point. Mark?
No real comments on that. I wonder, I still have a problem in this country, I guess, that we got all this movement, we're selling all these bonds to finance everything we're doing in government. And we're sending all this money overseas and aid and not really seeing positives about it. And then look what we're dealing with back home. I'm not going to use my adjective before, but I sometimes feel that way about it. And I'm not saying don't support people that are being suppressed and other things. When we have a hard time funding veterans benefits, sometimes Social Security and other social programs, and yet we send billions and billions of dollars overseas and keep borrowing money to do that, and it keeps affecting our economy overall, it just disturbs me a great deal. I don't know the answer. Matt probably does, but I don't have one.
I wish I knew the answer to that.
Yeah, I wish we all did. Matt Graham, I love your commentary on this. Parker does a great job. Folks, if you want to sign up for Les Parker's paid version of his newsletter, you can do so by putting in the word power in the code section for Power Seller. It's a great newsletter. It's one that he charges for typically, but if you sign up with the code, you get it for free. Just like Matt Graham extends his MBS Live, you get this for free over a period of time by just putting the word power. Time for the update on the markets with Matt Graham, MBS Live. Appreciate you being here, Matt Graham. What you got for us this week?
An opportunity to take a little bit of a nap last week and maybe this week too, depending on how things go.
Yeah, maybe.
We're in this environment where the bond market and rates tend to bounce between these two key reports, non-farm payrolls and CPI, Consumer Price Index. I've said that time and again over the past few months, and it continues to be the case where a majority of the momentum that's created by things on the calendar will come from those two reports, unless it's coming from the Fed announcement itself. And I would say that's arguably the case yet again right now. We had last CPI week before last, and that sent rates up and over some key technical levels in terms of Treasury yields. But here is the point. When that CPI report happened, it pushed 10-year yields up to about 4.33%. And then in the ensuing days, we bounced on that ceiling at least five times, maybe six times, depending on where you want to draw the line exactly. And it was generally perfectly sideways ever since then. And there's no reason to think that's necessarily going to change in a major way until we get the next major piece of information, which would be non-farm payrolls on March 8th. There's volatility inside a narrow range. Some reports matter a little bit. We even had S&P Global's PMI index move the needle to some extent last Thursday, but it's just noise in the bigger picture, hardly detectable by the time you're looking at a longer term chart. So not much in terms of data last week. Multiple Fed speakers, they mostly reiterated things that have already been said, which is don't pay too much attention to 1 month of CPI. We think the inflation is generally doing the right thing and that this should end up being noise. Whether they're right or wrong remains to be seen. But that PMI data moved the market because the price tracking inside that report indeed suggested that inflationary pressures were their weakest since October 2020. So there's a case to be made. And I saw an interesting chart on somebody posted on Twitter/X, whatever you're supposed to call it these days, talking about the average CPI reading for the month of January. I don't know because I didn't plug this into Excel and do verify this, but the chart seemed to suggest that January was a persistent outlier on the high side, which seems like something that would be corrected by seasonals. But in any event, if that's the case, then there is an argument to be made that January's inflation data, which is the stuff we got 2 weeks ago, is going to be an outlier in the bigger picture. But as always, we're data dependent and we have to get the data before we know what's going to happen next. The unfortunate thing about the recent crop of data is it just delays the confirmation capability. And that's why the Fed is really, I don't know, gearing down, slowing down, slowing its role when it comes to the rate cut conversation, because now the next inflation report that comes in, if it's just in line with expectations, that's one thing. Unless it is markedly weaker, markedly lower than expected, then it will now be that it just resets the decision time frame, and people say, okay, we got another good inflation report. Now we have to wait for a couple more before we can be totally sure. Whereas if the 2 week ago report came in weaker, then we would be very close to being able to confirm what the Fed is wanting to see and a rate cut cycle beginning soon. As far as what's coming up this week, there are a few more reports to sink our teeth into. There is PCE inflation, and that's an interesting conversation because PCE is often referred to as the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, specifically year over year, core PCE. That's the thing they want to see at 2%. Unfortunately for that report, CPI, the other one, comes out 2 weeks earlier and gets most of the market's reaction. So unless PCE says something very different, it's not likely to get a ton of reaction in terms of bond trading. But the nice thing about this report is because CPI had a negative impact on bonds, I think there's a bit of an asymmetric risk opportunity for the bond market in the event PCE comes out stronger than expected, or I should say weaker technically, if inflation comes out lower than expected. And let's put things in concrete terms. Last time around, this report came out at 0.2 month over month. Market upped its expectations to 0.4 month over month after CPI did the same thing 2 weeks ago. If it were to come in at 0.3 or 0.2, now all of a sudden that report in and of itself could make CPI look like an outlier, and it could produce much more of a market reaction than it has in recent months, which is not really hard to do considering it hasn't produced much of a reaction at all. Other than that, we did already get new home sales this morning. Close to expectations, 660,000 versus 680,000 forecast. And we'll get an update on home prices tomorrow. Just remember those major indices come out with a lag. That's for the month of December. And with us as always, MBA applications on Wednesday, GDP, Q4 GDP reading on Wednesday, as well as multiple Fed speakers. And then Thursday is when that PCE data comes out along with jobless claims. One major report that comes out this week, one report that we'd consider in that upper echelon, would be ISM manufacturing. That's on Friday, March 1st. And we do not have non-farm payrolls on Friday, March 1st, even though it's the first Friday of the month, which is normally when we get that. That has to do with the length of time that the Bureau of Labor Statistics needs to compute all of the data they collect for that. And so oftentimes March, if the first Friday of March falls on the first, second, or third, it'll often be punted to the following Friday
as far as the jobs report goes.
Very good. A lot of great information there. Any questions to start off with, Bill? Comments, questions?
I think that was great. And I think to simplify it for folks, right, stop sitting in the office watching MBS Live all the time and get out and talk to realtors, find borrowers, pre-qualify people, right? Go do your day job.
But the nice part about MBSLive.net is you can take it with you on your iPad and your iPhone. So you're not losing. You're not having to sit there.
You're both missing the point. Yeah. The nice part is there's a whole suite of marketing tools. You can put your realtors'
names on there.
And make marketing material with them on MBS Live. So
that's right. That's
use
right.
Use it to advantage.
So Matt, I'll revise my comment and say, stop focusing on the numbers in MBS Live and look at all the other great tools that it has there.
Yeah, don't be glued to the market right now. It's very easy to have your face too close to the monitor when in fact we're very sideways in the bigger picture right now and waiting for the next big shoe to drop. And it'll take months and months for that to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Mr. Kittle, your thoughts.
What Mark Helms said again.
BS. Mark's quotable for this whole podcast. It's all BS.
It can be. Look, Bill is exactly right. And to his point, and what Matt says, take the positive out of it and go out and make sales calls.
Yeah.
Go out and visit people. You've got to do loans. You got to do business and get your head out of all the negative and get your head out of rates because they are what they are.
They are what they are, yeah. And then what we're going to be hearing from Alice about the realtors need guidance and feedback on how to navigate what they're going through so as well, yeah. Mark Helm, thoughts, questions for Matt?
I think I've already answered this question.
Yep, that's what
I heard those words on Netflix one time.
Yeah.
Very good. Alan, any questions, comments?
No, everything was well said so far.
Good. Good job, Matt Graham. I appreciate you so much for being here. You got so much great content on your website. I was up here early this morning. I was going to ask you, my only question was, is I saw some optimism seem to play out early on in the market as it was opening today. As we watched interest rates down at a going down, now it's reversed up. Any reason for the lower start and then with the rise today?
No, I wouldn't read too much into the initial drop. There's a little bit of strength in the overnight session, but it actually began to dry up before it opened in the U.S. So had this gradual linear selling trend all night. Europe didn't help. And now it's treasury auction anxiety really kicking in because we have a condensed treasury auction cycle this week. Yeah.
Very big. Matt Graham, thanks for being here. I always love your report. Love your screens. Got them up all the time. Kittle's always giving me a bad time about the screens that are up behind me, but it is very effective. You do a great job, and I encourage people to sign up. MBSLive.net. You can use the LOL code, and you'll get the extended trial period, but just sign up. So good. So affordable. And it's like he says, and there's some great marketing tools. Thank you for reminding us about that. I do get caught up from my aspect of it on just looking at the numbers, and I think you really raise a great point is there's so many effective tools to help communicate out. And everyone say, yeah, I don't know what to say when I'm going to go out in the market here, or if I'm going to be doing some social media. Something we're going to be talking more about is this works very effectively on social media, the things that you do, where it helps people have content. It's all there. Great job.
Thanks, Dave.
Matt Graham, have a great week. Thanks for dialing in and being here with us. We've got Alan Pollock with a tech update. He is a tech industry advisor and so much more than just tech, but Alan's here with a tech update. What you got, friend?
Good to be here, David. Thank you. So I was searching for tech jokes and I'm coming up short. A lot of them are dumb. This was the only one that made me chuckle just a bit. It's not even that good, but I'll share it. Everyone talks about how quick Amazon is, right? Some things you can get hour delivery, some things 24 hours, some things take longer. So somebody wrote a post and said, I ordered a chicken and an egg from Amazon. I'll let you know. So what came first, right? The chicken or the egg?
That's bad.
They're waiting for their Amazon delivery. They'll find out. Let's move on to some good stuff. So David, a couple different things. First, if I just want to remind people, because it was a question that was asked of me and I brought it up last week, but how to talk to AI. So if you haven't heard just a few comments that we made last week, Mark Helm jumped in as well. Please go back to last week's episode. We talked just briefly about how to talk to AI. And there was just three quick things that I had mentioned just to remind you. You don't need to be nice. AI has no feelings, and you make sure you tell it who's the boss. And if you do those things, you can have more control over what you're telling AI and what it's receiving. Now, if you swear at it, it won't swear back to you. It'll tell you you've hurt its feelings or that it doesn't want to communicate in that fashion. But I'm not saying to be a jerk, but you can tell it, you can handle it, right? You can be the situation fixer, but make it do what you need and you'll get much better results. And Mark had some great comments on that as well. Now, David, I was looking around and I found some interesting things. It's a two-part conversation that I pieced together today. The first one is that I saw somebody's post on LinkedIn that talked about mortgage CRMs. And this person had said, which one is the best? And there was a whole bunch of people that commented. And this person, her name's Kelly Yale, by the way, give her some credit for her post. It was a very good post. There was 14 items that she listed in there, and she had some video where she talked about them, and the feedback of the people were really good. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. So why hire a consultant? This is a question that a lot of people have. And I know, David, you've been an industry coach and advisor for a very long time. You probably deal with a lot of these. But I'm seeing the trend where it's hard to make the right hire in technology, whether it's go-to-market, building a product, whether it's integrating those vendors, managing vendor oversight. It's difficult. There is no one perfect way, but there's a lot of people that have had experience. And so regardless of building a new project or taking on a bunch of new vendors, whatever that is, why hire a consultant? And so I thought about it for a moment, and I found a couple really interesting items. And they range from consultants or subject matter experts. They're low risk and high reward. I saw some great things about streamlining processes, support during transitions, which was I thought were very interesting. Project management's okay. I don't know if that's really one of the best ones, but here's three that I thought were just really interesting. And if you're thinking about hiring a consultant, especially for technology and product go-to-market, really it falls in line with everything. You want to think of these. The first is they want an outside eye, meaning that sometimes you're dealing with an issue in your life or in your company, and what would you typically do? You turn to friends and family, right? You should turn to an industry coach, an advisor, a consultant, especially when you're making tough decisions and getting a different perspective. The second one is you need extra horsepower, right? Problems that you're looking to overcome, they're really important, but you don't necessarily have the manpower to focus on them. You can't take your eye off the ball. You have other projects. You're working on day-to-day operations. So don't worry about who has that core job responsibility. That's when it's a good time to hire a consultant. You're trying to get something out before the next big conference, the next big announcement. Usually there's a timing of when press releases and your pilots go out. And if you're a lender, you're between contracts. You're trying to figure out, when am I really going to get this done? When do I have to have it done? When do I train everybody? Really important. And the training is going to come into the next part of this conversation. And then finally, a lot of companies want a safe zone, meaning there's no ambiguity. There's no hard feelings. There's no drama, right? You're bringing somebody with an outside opinion. They help you make decisions. They can work with the folks on your team, but they don't provide any risk to the folks on your team. So anyways, those are some really interesting ones. And now, David, and you probably, and Mark, you as well, probably can think back to those and consider times in your career where those have hit home. But I just want to go to this post by Kelly Yale. It was really interesting. So she listed 15 things, and they range from like, how long have you been in the business? Questions to ask the CRM platform, by the way. What's one aspect of your system that defines your uniqueness? What reporting makes sense? Do you have any AI baked into the system? And so I was reading some of the comments. And by the way, one of the companies I do some fractional consulting for, Candid, had messaged on that thread as well. But this was pretty interesting. This was a gentleman, Andrew Watley, and he said, given the importance of a mortgage CRM to mortgage growth, perhaps the right question is, what expert can I find to help me through the process? And so Kelly wrote back and said, much of it's how it's implemented and trained. That's where I see the biggest holes in the industry. You can't just buy an iPhone and not know how to add an app or configure the settings, but to know the industry and how it works. And everybody wants that shiny thing. They lose interest once they've started figuring it out. So you need that coach. You need that person to help move it along. We've talked about this all the time. Kelly's exactly right. You can buy any software platform in our industry, but unless you are committed to bringing that on board, you're committed to the time and effort, you're committed to making it successful. Let's just round it up to that. Then you will have a successful implementation. And David, Mark, we've talked all the time about, we've got these vendors in our industry, they're all great. Everybody has built great, creative, innovative solutions. Everybody's integrated with somebody else. Everybody spent money on their tech, right? It's a matter of who's the right fit and who offers the coaching and who offers that partnership and that relationship. So hopefully I gave a couple good points on why you should work with a consultant or an advisor. I'll pause for some feedback from my cohorts here. And again, as always, thank you for listening.
Yeah,
David, back to you.
Yeah, always good to have you on the podcast and always enjoy the content. Mark Helm, any questions that you have?
No, I want to make a comment, though, when you started off about the AI piece. I'm going to give everybody on the podcast a personal statement about AI that I think will be meaningful to you when you hear it. On the more mundane things that I do, when I get lazy, if I got to send out 10 memos, and I'm not sure how I want to word things, I've been thinking about them, I'll pick up my phone, I'll dictate something in AI, let them format it and clean it up for me. And I'm probably saving 75% of my time doing that. I still get my message. My message is what I dictate into the AI and say, format this in an email or whatever. And they do it. And then I go back in and edit it. But think about that, guys. I'm saving 75% of my time screwing with emails and memos. So if you're trying to be work efficient like I am, I'm a big believer in AI right now because it's helping me manage my schedule and allow me to knock things out really quick. And also fixing stupid things I say in emails that you don't realize are stupid until AI tells you it's stupid. I'm just a big believer in it. And I think if all of us use that, you'd find yourself doing a better, quicker job.
Yeah, I tell you, one of the things that I'm finding is that it is not a perfect world out there. Bard, which is now Gemini, which is Google's artificial intelligence, had a major black eye recently. It sounded like a great tool because you could create images. Create me an image of this or that, and you could put it all out there. But it was so woke. Ben Shapiro put out a report on this. And for example, give me an image or a picture of one of the kings of France. And it brought out a picture of an African-American. And there's never been an African-American. It became so obvious that Gemini, that Google had to take Gemini's photo creation down because it was so everything. There was no white males. And one of the things that ran in there was create a picture of a white male eating peanut butter toast in or a peanut butter sandwich. It was coming up. It was putting in specific requests for an image of something that would bring back a white male. And it refused to do it. And so it was like there was such an agenda behind it. Literally, they got so much feedback on it that Google had to take that off the market. And so if you're looking for Gemini to go out or what was Bard, now it's called Gemini. Alan, I'd love to get your thoughts. Did you hear the big dust up about that? The big thing?
I did, and I've used a couple other platforms like Ideology and some others that create images. It's sometimes very difficult to get it to make what you'd like. I did see all of that about Gemini. I use Gemini and ChatGPT. I'm not as much of a fan of Gemini. Some things were initially easier in Gemini, and then ChatGPT quickly caught up, like uploading an image or a spreadsheet, things like that, PDF. But these things, that is one of the issues. There's biases. The way you speak to it, and I don't think we'll quickly get away from that. So we have to understand what they're good for and when to use them and how to apply them, which we mention each week here. By the way, David, there's a site, an AI tool. This thing is absolutely amazing. It's called explorer.globe.engineer. So if you just go in your browser and type that in, explorer.globe.engineer, and you get to it, and it says finding everything humans know about. And I put in as an example, building an app in the mortgage industry. And this thing comes out and it gives you instant access. It combs the whole internet, gives you reports and insights, security measures with images and graphics, user-friendly interfaces. It recommends company, time-saving features. It talks about e-signature. It did all this with inside. The list goes on. It shows you data analytics. It gives you links to sites that have the analytics, all about building an app. Talks about integrations, workflow. I didn't have to tell it anything other than what I just told you early on. This thing is amazing. And if you're researching and you don't want the bias image generating, you can go to explorer.globe.engineer. But my whole point in telling you that site, David, is just about that AI is just, it's gathering information and the weighting of what it gathers and what it tells you probably is going to continue to need some refinement.
Yeah, it's explorer.globe.engineer.
Yep, explorer.globe.engineer. Very cool site. The project is called Globe. That is the name of it. Yeah. And it's wild.
All right.
Alan, that's exciting to me because, again, you're using AI to save you hours and hours of research. Now, we still got that little bit that we got to be careful about, that you can't believe everything you get in AI. But if you're they're doing quotes that you can back into, you're okay. But I think AI is one of the best things that's ever happened in the world as far as structure-based content and format. And the ability it has, it can create what you're doing to a certain market of people. If I did one thing, want to say, if I was writing a senior about a reverse mortgage, how would you do the intro? You wouldn't believe what it gave me. It was something that would have taken me a couple hours to develop, but it was really good. So you can add that, the parameters up there, maybe that other AI was doing things it shouldn't have done, but you can add how you want to approach it. You can write something for a child to understand, a college professor to understand, or a teacher to understand, or maybe, guys, even our wives to understand. See, I said that because Alice is off the phone.
Sure. That's what I'll suggest for my wife. Anyway, it's explorer.globes. So I was wondering, because when I was typing it in, I wasn't getting it. So you texted that over to us. Thanks. So we'll put a link to it in the show notes. Explorer, explorer.globe.engineer. Pretty interesting. A lot of great information. Alan, thank you so much for the update.
Talk to you soon.
I'm looking forward to it. Mark, anything you have as we wrap up today's podcast?
I just want to put a plug in for our upcoming podcast on servicing. I think it's going to be a set of podcasts. We don't know exactly how many yet, maybe three, and it'll cover different aspects of servicing, and I think it's going to be really good. But I would also ask the listeners if they have any questions, particularly about servicing, they want to pose to us so we can include it in the podcast, answers or thoughts about it. We'll be glad to do that. So if you can send those in, David, and I'm not sure how to exactly send that in, you can probably tell them.
Yeah, then you can email them to me. If you wouldn't mind, email them to david@tms-advisors.com. Good. Okay. Excellent, great. Mark. Appreciate it
Thank
very
you.
Much. That wraps up the podcast for this week, folks. Appreciate you being here. Tell others about it. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Total Expert, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modex, Knowledge Coop, and iEmergent. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.